Welcome to UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast, a series of interviews with people from around the world, gifted and passionate about communicating and defending the Christian gospel. For more information about UCCF, Christian Persuaders, and more episodes from this podcast, do go to uccf.org.uk/Christian-Persuaders. Well, today we're talking to Amy Orr Ewing, who you may know as the author of Why Trust the Bible and But Is It Real? But Amy, what have you been doing this year?
Well, goodness, juggling parenthood and ministry. I work with the Rabbi Zacharias Trust and the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics, and my focus really is on training people in apologetics and evangelism, but also anyone who, I guess, for our vision is that anyone who's involved in training at all, our primary focus needs to be doing it ourselves, doing evangelism ourselves. So, started the year in the States, beginning of the year. I was down in South Carolina at Clint Eastwood's home church.
Wow, what was that like then?
Quite amazing. It's sort of just outside, well, in Charleston, Mount Pleasant, and it's an Anglican church that's seen tremendous growth through conversion in the last 5 to 10 years, and I'd been invited to preach evangelistically there. And
well, let's just pause and talk about that. So what was your title? What was the approach?
Okay, so it was the first Sunday of the year, and I spoke, so it was Epiphany in the church calendar, you know, the three kings visiting, so I did it on that. It was quite interesting. I had to speak twice, the same sermon but to two services. And so I did the first one with a kind of focus on looking at the different approaches of Herod's advisors and the Magi, who actually all had pretty much the same information,
right,
and what they did with the evidences that they had.
And
then the second service, I felt very strongly prompted by the Holy Spirit in the middle of my sermon that I should do an appeal at the end.
Okay.
And I don't often do a kind of full-on, hardcore evangelistic appeal. You know, I often do a call for response, but I really felt strongly compelled. And so this was the same message, but it was quite a challenging, I guess, end. And the challenge was, have you been like Herod, who pretended to want to worship, but actually in his heart had never submitted to Christ? Or like the advisors who knew the information, and they knew it was true, but they did nothing about it. Or you're going to be like the wise men kind of thing. And amongst the responses, there was quite a powerful time at the end, and five men responded. It's very, very, in some senses, traditional in the South of America context. And these five, some quite senior business guys, and then a much younger chap, 23-year-old, responding with tears, and, you know, really quite overwhelming and very different from the first service. And it was just it was very interesting to see how the same message in the hands of God, I guess, has a different. And then I went on to speak in Annapolis at the Naval Academy, and I got a message through at the end of this preaching tour. We were my husband Frog was there too. We were completely exhausted, and we'd seen a tremendous response as well at the Naval Academy, which is probably the most elite academic institution in the States, as well as obviously having the military, naval edge to it. The message was from the church pastor back in South Carolina, and this 23-year-old guy had committed his life to the Lord with tears. His parents had dragged him along to church because it was still, you know, the end of Christmas kind of thing. He'd come to Christ with, really a genuine conversion. And within those 2 weeks, he'd been killed. And his mother sent this message via the church leader, just to say, obviously they were completely devastated. They lost their son. But, you know, their whole life is Jesus.
Yeah.
And now they know that he's in heaven.
Yeah.
It was absolutely incredible. And it was really, it completely blew me away, because obviously we know that we're dealing with life and death, but it's so easy to just kind of go through the motions, isn't it? And to, or to kind of fulfill your duty as an evangelist, but to remember, I guess, the imminence of eternity has really stayed with me this year. And I think also that challenge to be responsive to the Holy Spirit.
Well, I was wondering, I mean, has that kind of perhaps shaped the way you've prayed and prepared, but also being responsive to promptings as you've been speaking?
I think so. I wouldn't say I've always been, but as I was preaching, I had that sense you need to do a really strong appeal here now. And it was interesting that it was all men who responded.
Yeah.
And there was that need for a challenge. It was quite fascinating. Right. And a lot of our softly approach actually doesn't necessarily connect with people are at. But I felt in my, you know, the human bit of you just thinks, oh no, I can't believe you want me to do this, Lord. You know, you want to be liked, you want to, you know, you never, if you put yourself out there, obviously it's God, but if you put yourself out there and call for a response, it's a vulnerable position.
For sure it is, yeah.
In public. So it was very encouraging and I think challenging, and it's just, it's challenged me not just in my public preaching ministry, but also in that daily witness with other mothers at the school gate and my neighbours on my street, that it's very easy to think, oh, we've got all the time in the world, and I've sown some seed today, but I haven't, you know, necessarily preached the gospel. But we don't know how this guy was 23 years old, had everything to live for. You know, we just don't know how long we've got.
Now, was that in your mind when you went across to Leicester in the spring?
Yeah, so seamless in there. But it was actually, it was funny, so I was involved in the university mission in Leicester, and I couldn't do the whole week because of the children. And so they'd asked me to come do a day, so I did two lunch bars back to back on the Bible, and could it really be true? And then in the evening, a more explicitly evangelistic sort of evening preach, as it were. And the lunchtime was fascinating. It was largely people there through cold contact coming for the free lunch.
Okay.
Yeah. Which was really interesting. A few friends of CU members were there, but mostly total randoms, which is such an interesting dynamic. It's a really different dynamic from I've brought my friends and we've been having a long-term conversation about Christ. Yeah. So the first time I gave them, and there were quite a few Muslims there and some converts to Islam from kind of black Christian, nominal Christian background.
Yep.
Really fascinating. So, yeah, tremendous privilege. We saw one guy at the end who was ready to pray a prayer, which I thought was completely amazing. I mean, obviously God had been working in him, and I think various people randomly from his course had witnessed him without knowing each other had witnessed to him, if that makes sense. And so he came through, and and then there were just fascinating conversations afterwards, particularly I had two different conversations with groups of people who'd been drawn to Islam. Again, young men who were being drawn into this, into the power dynamic of Islam, but who also had real questions about whether they'd either made the right choice or whatever. So that we had a lot of conversation about evidence, all in the presence of the Muslims who'd brought them into Islam.
Wow.
So it was quite an interesting dynamic.
But now I'm thinking, so you got this talk on the Bible, sort of why trust the Bible, I presume, and looking at evidence. But often people think, well, yeah, you know, manuscripts, whatever. But what about relevance? I mean, how do you communicate this as important?
Okay, so the way that I approach that subject of the Bible is I do something on the manuscripts, but I tend to go in via the question of interpretation. Is it all just a matter of interpretation?
Okay.
And take on the kind of postmodern question. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, in my book, Why Trust the Bible, I do 10 questions. And that book came out of lunch bars.
Sure.
It came out of the feeling of, gosh, there are a lot more questions about the Bible than your classic historical apologetics deals with. So, issues of interpretation, history, issues of, you know, isn't the Bible sexist? What about the gay issue? What about war in the Old Testament? Is God this genocidal maniac? How do we compare? Why is the Bible any better as a holy book than the Quran or the Vedas? So I just cover 10 in my book, and I tend to try and, if in an evangelistic talk, do maybe 2 or 3.
Sure. Yeah.
And then open things up for Q&A, and other questions will come up from there. So I think in that talk I did the issue of interpretation, and then I did the issue of quickly the manuscripts. But then what I think is more significant is, well, you may be able to defend the manuscript tradition, but that doesn't mean that what they say is actually true.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we can say Homer's Iliad has, you know, we can trust the text, but it doesn't mean it contains truth. So looking at the whole question of the supernatural and verification, I guess, how do we know external from the Bible that what it says is true?
Yeah. Okay, let's just take a step back. So you're, you know, nowadays you're travelling around and you're speaking on these kind of issues. What was your kind of, your route into this kind of work? I mean, were these questions you struggled with back in the day, or why is this a particular interest or passion to you?
I think, gosh, that's such a big question to answer. Well, I studied theology and I planned to do doctoral research and go into academia, but I think that my heart in that was always to be useful in evangelism and apologetics, if that makes sense. Although I never imagined a kind of career in it, I imagined a career and then doing that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that really happened organically. Even while I was at university, people invited me to come and give short evangelistic talks, both at Oxford and then other friends at different universities, Sheffield and other places too. And so I'd kind of begun doing stuff. I mean, I didn't really have a clue how to do it. It just sort of started.
Uh-huh.
And I guess people invited me back, and it kind of snowballed from there. And then I met Michael Ramsden, who I work with. Well, Frog, my husband, and I were both speaking at a student prayer conference, and he was speaking there too. And we just connected, he and his wife and us, and sort of became friends with this shared passion for evangelism. And then we, at that point, we were living in London, and we were moving back to Oxford as Frog was going to train for ordination at Wycliffe Hall. And I was all set to do my doctorate back at my old college at Christ Church. It was, all the wheels were in motion, had my place and everything. And Michael just invited me to come and join the team. At that point, it was just him, Nan, and he was doing a lot of evangelistic meetings, but he really wanted someone else to come and kind of form a training program in apologetics, but also, I guess, not too dry and academic, but with that passion for the gospel as well. And so he asked me to do that. I was 23, had no clue really. He was about 26. Ravi Zacharias I'd met as well, and Brock and I had hosted an event for him in London with the various contacts that we had that he spoke at evangelistically. And he had been praying for a woman to join their international team, because apologetics is actually a very male world, isn't it? And so that had happened, and I think they just sensed from the Lord that this was the right next thing. And I mean, Ravi really just released us, got the funding behind us and said, go for it. And we had to start totally from scratch. This is like 12 years ago now. And the diary was by no means full at all. I mean, there were probably about 2 events in it when I started. And then just slowly things built up. And I think my experience has been that you get invited to do a couple of things, and then if those meetings go well, then other things just come. And now the diary is sort of 2 years planned ahead.
For sure. Now, so 12 years of an increasingly busy diary and reading and writing. Now, if you met yourself, age 23, coming through the door, what would you tell the 23-year-old Amy? What have you...
Well, I think... And we sort of have them in our system, if that makes sense, because what Ravi did with us was so unusual, which was to see something, to see that spark. And obviously it was incredibly unpolished, and we've learned a lot, and we're all still learning, of course, along the way, but to encourage us and to open doors for us as well. So it's at Trust we have an associates program, and what we're trying to do there is spot people who have got massive potential, or who are already, because it's a European thing as well, who are already doing stuff in their countries. But within the UK, we're trying to give them our invitations that we can't do. So we have quite a diverse group on that, but particularly the women on that programme I'm trying to mentor and give all the invitations I can't do onto them. And we meet once a year together, but we're also in email contact. And do you know what, I think the greatest need is actually for encouragement.
Okay.
And a lot of our training focuses a lot on feedback, which can be quite bruising. But actually, obviously, we do need feedback and we need useful critiquing. But more than that, I think we need encouragement, because when you go in and do an event at a university and you're going to take 20 minutes of questions, and very often you might have the head of the Islamic or secular society, you're going to take a lot of flack. And what you need in that moment is courage.
Yeah.
And therefore you need encouragement. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I would say that is what Ravi Zacharias and Michael Ramson, the best thing that they have given to me was that encouragement and belief. And when things went pear-shaped, which of course they do, and they still do now, I'm sure, but you know, when you kind of come back and think, oh my goodness, I said totally the wrong thing, to say, you know, to give you that word of encouragement, pray for you, stand with you. And yeah, to have that group of people around you who are for you, who believe in you and can say, yes, we can see the call of God on your life, we believe in you, we affirm it, and we want to resource that. So, I don't,
No, that's so great. No, I mean, absolutely, and I think that is very key. People definitely need opportunities, so that, encouraging
so
and
that's
training.
I think that's what I'm trying to bring to the people that I come across, because I've really benefited from that myself. And you know what, in terms of the feedback, I think if you're putting yourself out there and taking questions from the floor, you know, or you learn to know when your answer hasn't necessarily brilliantly connected. And that is the greatest source of feedback, to get you back on your knees and get you back to reading and, you know, researching and thinking, gosh, I think I need a greater depth in this area.
For sure.
So I think, and the challenge in apologetics is, you might give a talk on the Bible or suffering or whatever. If you're going to do a Q&A, you need to be a generalist as well. You need to be prepared for anything.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And that's the area where, you're putting yourself on that line of vulnerability time and time again.
Well, yeah. I'm really glad you said that, because the Christian Persuaded program does offer that kind of encouragement and feedback and training. Now, in terms of resources, people think, I need to learn. What would be your recommendations of resources that are available to all that they could find or buy that would be helpful for people who are developing as apologists? Any good sort of sources would you recommend? Or
yes, let me think.
You don't have to say Be Thinking. That's
no, I would say Be Thinking, funnily enough, because loads of our stuff is free on there, isn't it? Do you know what, I sometimes people feel a bit guilty about stealing someone else's talk, and I really think you shouldn't at all. You know, Ravi Zacharias, Michael Ramson, I've used loads of them as jokes and illustrations as well as ideas. Obviously, you do need to write your own material, but go and listen to Michael Green, who is a brilliant evangelist. Immerse yourself in people who are successful, I would say. And to read stuff, yes, of course you need to do that. And, you know, there are books like, I think the Baker Encyclopedia of Apologetics is probably the most important resource to have. Have you got that? You're looking surprised.
I have. Never heard of it.
Okay, so the Baker Encyclopedia of Apologetics is probably the best and it goes quite deeply in very good bibliographies at the end of each section is the best kind of general thing, and then there are things like Beyond Opinion, which we've written as a team, and then obviously all our resources. Paul Copan's very good, so on Relativism, True For You.
Yeah.
I think Chris Wright's book, The God I Don't Understand, on War in the Old Testament is good as well, quite useful. But to listen, J. John, to listen to as an evangelist, fantastic, because you know, you're not necessarily going to totally replicate it, but the mixture of humour and profundity is very powerful, and the challenge to make a response to Christ in every message. Michael Green's very strong on that as well. I think to listen to people who are really, really good. And I learn through listening to people as well as reading. And you can do that. For me, as a mother, I can do that when I'm preparing the supper for my children, you know. I think it's very uplifting as well, personally, in your own devotional life, to listen to the gospel preached well. It's very moving as an evangelist, and to put yourself under that kind of ministry, if you're doing it all the time. And it's so easy to do that now with the internet, isn't it? But I think that would be my top encouragement.
Well, thank you for encouraging us and for talking to us, Amy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast. For more information, go to uccf.org.uk.